Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Deeper. It is so good to have you here, as always. I'm here with Dan. Dan, thanks for showing up. It's always good to have you here consistently. I love that.
Yes. Good to be with you, Austin. Yeah. Start of another week.
Start of another week. And, man, I guess we'll just jump right into it because this sermon was a doozy in a great way. There's so much that we could talk about. So could you kind of refresh our memory as to what we did cover?
Yes. We were in Genesis 22 this week. As Austin just said, a well-known story where God commands Abraham to sacrifice Isaac, his son, his only son. And just a powerful text. There's a lot of connections, of course, with the story of Jesus going to the cross. And, of course, the Lord stops. Abraham provides a ram for him. And we talked about provision as the centerpiece, the Lord's provision as the centerpiece of the story and the text. But there's so many interesting things. And, of course, in this series we're doing, we're thinking of how this points to the whole. And we connected it then, of course, with Jesus' own testing and going to the cross and the provision in his resurrection. But then our stories, too, of how we have to wrestle with the Lord in the midst of testing sometimes and just with who he is. And then also that trust as well in his provision and how we see that in our lives. So that's just a brief snapshot of it. But, yes, a wonderful... Wonderful text, and also a challenging one because of the nature of it.
Absolutely.
And just what God confronts Abraham with there.
It's one of those stories that when you hear it for the first time as a kid, you're like, oh, yeah, this just totally makes sense. And then you revisit it later, and you're like, what?
Mm-hmm.
What's with this? So I really appreciated you taking the time to go through that, to walk through some of that with us. Before I ask any questions, I guess I'll just start out with, was there anything that you would have liked to have gone further into but didn't necessarily? Again, there was like 19 verses or something like that. So
yeah, we didn't really even, I just mentioned it, but at the end of the text, the angel speaks again and just reiterates the blessing that was spoken in chapter 12 in Genesis. And just how neat that is, the bookend of, you know, God spoke at the outset to Abraham, I'm going to bless you and bless those who bless you, curse those who curse you. I'm going to make the nations blessed through you. And that is reiterated there at the end of this chapter after this whole testing incident. And so that's a neat tie-in there and just seeing how God brings about that blessing. He provides for it. It's connected with our trust in him. You can't disconnect those things, even though we talk about this being about God's grace first and foremost and his provision in the ram in this story. But, you know, if Abraham wasn't trusting, that he wouldn't be able to receive that blessing. And the same for us. Jesus gives us all we need, provides what we need for salvation, but we have to trust him and receive that. So a good tie-in there, too. And there's other parts that we talked about a bit. Even we didn't even really talk about Isaac.
Yeah.
And we don't know exactly how old he is, but he's got to be, you know, at least double digits, I would say, probably. And maybe he's not quite teenager, hard to know. But he's carrying wood. And
old enough to be aware, kind of.
He's asking questions, where's the lamb? And so, yeah, we talked more about Abraham's psyche. Be interesting to know Isaac, what's he kind of thinking there? And as he's placed on the altar, and what are you doing? It seems like he goes along with it anyways, but we don't know. So, and some of that's you just can wonder about and imagine. But, yeah, lots of good things. I wonder, you know, where's Sarah at? She's not mentioned in this story, but it's not like Abraham and Isaac just took off without her knowing, probably. So, yeah, it's a whole family story there and just the struggle. But I think some of the conversation here will get in a little more deeper into some of the things that we touched on maybe in passing during the sermon too. So
yeah, and I'd love to do that because at one point we were talking a bit about, you know, the testing that God puts Abraham through and Isaac through for sure in this, and the difference between testing and being tempted.
Yes,
and how God will never tempt us, but he will test us. And I was just wondering how can we really discern whether we're being tested or tempted, because I know, especially in our sin nature, that is so easy to get confused.
I agree. The kind of difference that we used yesterday to talk about it is that in the testing, God's trying to try or to prove our faith, our loyalty, our trust in him. You think about a test at school, it's not trying to make us do poorly, it's trying to prove you know, how well we know things. It's an opportunity to really shine, as it were. Mm-hmm. Whereas we talked about temptation being this enticement toward evil, an enticement, you know, kind of alluring, deceiving, as we think of Satan in that way, kind of luring us toward evil. And I hope that's helpful, at least of thinking of some of the differences. But as far as identifying them, if you're in a particular situation, the testing piece, there's not kind of this, you know, well, I want to do this now. I want to have this affair. Or I want to treat someone poorly. It's more about directly our relationship with God. All those things are too, of course, but mm-hmm. There's not this alluring kind of, you know, I'm going to put this right before you. Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's a better way to even describe that out.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, because I think, yeah, a lot of the time it's really just, you know, when we're looking at this, it could be a, you know, we're being tested. Like, I'll look at our the immigration situation that Danica and I had to deal with. Mm-hmm. That was very clearly a testing, refining period.
Mm-hmm.
There were temptations that accompanied that because of, you know, the struggle of dis, and the temptation to be angry was a really big one that, you know, mm-hmm. I especially had to deal with, and my temptation to treat people poorly because of that, mm-hmm. because of this refining. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it kind of, the temptations come on as supplementary sometimes, I think.
Yeah, that's probably a good way of talking about it. As we think about the ways in Scripture that God is seen testing his people, the testing typically comes in a non-pleasant form. So they're in the wilderness, the mm-hmm. people going through, and God says there, especially in Deuteronomy, he was testing his people. Abraham here in this story, this is not something, you know, it's not like, ooh, look at that cupcake over there. That looks like it'll be enjoyable. This is a situation, I don't want any part of that. The immigration story you just shared personally was not something you would have liked to go through, whereas temptation often has a very sweet look on the surface, right? Yeah. Like, ooh, wow, look at this thing. Or if I say that, you know, that'll make me look better. And
or at least make me feel better.
Right, exactly. And so there's maybe some of that on the very front of it, where God's tests typically are refining, as you said. There's some sort of challenge there, and then it shows kind of where we're at versus the temptations, like, ooh, like what about this over here? And you know, more of that alluring, more looks sweet, especially up front. But you're right, there could be a connection too, and we see that with, for instance, with the Israelites in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. God's testing them. And as they don't trust him, they fall quickly into idolatry, sexual immorality, you know, the catalog of sins, rebellion against the other leaders. So I think we have to pay attention, be listening, and just be identifying. As we said, a lot of times we don't like to think of God testing us. And maybe it's hard to see in the moment sometimes. In hindsight, it becomes clear, maybe even with your situation. Yeah, well, it's good to think about.
Absolutely, and the hindsight was really, you know, key to at least especially for us, a lot of this, because, man, I love that refining, that analogy, because that really reframed a lot of these struggles and these tests in such a helpful way. You know, because looking at, again, the last 3-4 years of our lives, of Danica and I's lives, and having to deal with the stress of the immigration system and everything else that was going on in the last few years, that was so easy to get discouraged and angry. But then when we reframe it as like, okay, no, this is a refining process. We're having all of the dross, all of the extra superfluous stuff, you know, whether that was in our relationship or whether that was in our faith or what have you, you know, that really made us stronger, more prepared to take on whatever the next stage has. So I first did want to say thank you for that analogy. That was a super helpful analogy for me. And then just kind of ask you how you've seen that refining process in your life. Because, you know, that looks totally different for everyone.
It does. And I love the refiner's picture, too. It's right from Scripture, in a few different places. And just that idea of the Lord being there with us, but refining us, like you said, to take that dross off. He's going to put us in the hottest heat of the fire. That's what the refiner does. But the picture is also that the refiner will not take his or her eyes off that object, will be there, will be watching, right, ready if there's danger there to pull out. But the completion of the refinement process is done when that refiner can see his or her image reflected back to them. And I love that from a scriptural standpoint, because that's, God's bringing us back to that full reflection of his image. So I love that image, and yeah, I think it fits well with the testing. Personally, yeah, I think you mentioned your own kind of issue with immigration and going through that process. For me, yeah, I think of one going back to when I was in college. I had an uncle I was close with who passed away suddenly, and that was very difficult. I never had a loss like that in my life, and just trying to process that. And really now I can look back and see how the Lord did use that to draw me closer and to see some priorities in my life and how I wanted to make my relationship with the Lord more of a priority. And just that reality of life, life and death in that case. For me also, I think going to seminary and following the call there in a different kind of way. And just saying like, okay, I'm taking this step. I was moving away from the area I grew up with and really kind of stepping out in a different way. And that was testing, and it was a step of trust to do that, kind of like Abraham leaving home in the first place. Mm-hmm. And again, things show up, and, you know, boy, I'm behaving this way because maybe I'm anxious, easy to see in hindsight. But I could see where God was molding and shaping my character now, some 15 years later, through that experience. And there's others, too. Absolutely. Well, but those are a couple that come right to mind.
Yeah, well, and I appreciate you sharing that because, again, that's just – again, refining is never a fun process for those for you going in it. Like, it's you're in the middle of the fight. It's hot. You're getting beat. All of this extra stuff is coming out, and that's really tricky. So I appreciate you sharing that. That's always, again, good to learn from other people and what theirs looked like to draw encouragement. One key element of the later half of the sermon that I wanted to kind of latch onto here was how we so often will take parts of God that we see as uncomfortable, unknowable. We don't like, to be honest, a lot of the time, and kind of break it down and make it into a vision of God that we're more comfortable with. You know, we saw how the Israelites will do that over and over and over and over again, sometimes literally with the golden calf. And I started thinking about ways, you know, that in our modern times we make God comfortable for us. And what was convicting to me was that immediately I was like, oh, I know some people who do that. I'm like, I know some people who they have this idea of God that they have taken and made him comfortable.
Yes.
And that was convicted because I was like, oh, this is the whole, you know, log in my own eye, speck in my brother's eye situation here. You know, I'm immediately going to, these people have messed up. These people have a messed up view of God. I don't really have that. I've got it right. And so I guess I've got two questions with this. First, How can we start to shift from this pointing at the speck in someone else's eye to, how can we shift from the pointing at the speck while ignoring the log in our own? Like, how can we start focusing on that self-improvement, self-relationship part? And then secondly, what are some warning signs that we might have made God to be something we're comfortable with? And how do we then go about the destruction of that idol healthily?
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Austin, because I think it's true. And probably for all of us to a certain degree that we easily think of either a person or groups, you know, this is how they're shaping God in their own way. And clearly in Jesus' teaching, he lays out not just the verse you mentioned, but in other ways where we start quickly looking around us. Thank you. I'm not like the tax collector or that person over there in the other pew who I think has a misstrewn view.
That person in the other denomination.
Yes, or or wherever it might be. So that first piece, how do I make sure I'm giving proper attention to my own maybe reshaping of God or whatever issue it might be? Probably just making sure we start there. You know, as we read Scripture, it's not first and foremost about the people around us. It's our interaction with the Lord. It's about Him and Him speaking to us and Him reshaping us after His image, as we said. So first and foremost, we should be thinking, what is the Lord saying here that I need to hear? How is He maybe cutting my heart, circumcising my heart from? And if I'm not starting there, that's an issue. If I'm always thinking of everybody else and how they've got it wrong or missing, that's a red flag. There are times to be prophetic and to be able to speak into that, not just for a pastor, but that can be true in your friend group, at school, at work. There are times to speak into things that are real and going on. But we always should be taking the time to look at ourselves. And I think that begins with our own prayer and times of devotion, letting the Lord speak to us, letting Him cut us as we need to, test us, as we're talking about with this passage, and making sure that's a regular rhythm, that I'm not always just looking outside of myself, assuming I've got things right.
So then how, on that level, then how do we know when to be prophetic? Mm. And, you know, because if I see, you know, someone, you know, that I care about doing something or, you know, acting in a certain way that I'm like, man, this is hurtful. How do I know? And if I might think it's sinful even. How do I know whether or not, like, this is a time to say, hey, let's do some reorienting here?
Mm-hmm.
Or how do I know if it's like, okay, let me, like, how do I know when to do that versus when to be on my own introspective?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great question. I hope sometimes you feel that prompting of the Spirit, right? That it's, there's a clear, like, I need to speak up here. We even talked, just I was at a meeting of some of the area churches last week, and we talked about church safety and abuse things and safe church things. And one of the things is to not let behaviors like that continue, right? Mm-hmm. If you see something that's off, you need to speak out into it and stop it, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's part of it. You know, if we're seeing sinful behavior, we have the calling to say something about that. Now, you and I should think about the way we do that. Certainly, if I'm coming across as, you know, from on high and I never make any mistakes, and but we do need to speak out at times and try to do that in the way that it can be heard.
Yeah.
And probably often, too, to go back and reflect on even how that went afterwards and how did that person receive that? How did I come across? And it's just worth reflection. But I would say you're right. There's times where we need to speak up and first and then not say, well, let me go think about it. And then, because a lot of times it's in the moment.
Right.
And we do need to say something. And the Spirit, I believe, if we're listening, is prompting us. And why do I feel like I need to say something? It's because I think we do. The Spirit's calling us out for that. But we need to be aware of our place. You know, like Jesus said, yeah, make sure, you know, you're aware of yourself. If I'm calling out someone like, boy, you really think you need to calm down and you're drinking there, and I'm at the bar, you know, every other night, well, I need to address some things personally, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I might be right, but how's that going to be heard? And if I'm not even addressing that in my own life.
And that's an interesting element there because, you know, absolutely sometimes there's these times where like, yeah, you're absolutely right. You need to stop doing this thing. And it's not going to be received well because I'm dealing with this. Mm-hmm. So like I was saying earlier, I, especially, you know, through all the immigration stuff, really started to struggle with anger.
Mm.
You know, I would get really angry at systems and at people and just the way everything in our immigration system was set up.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I, you know, I'm not proud of it, but I was just an angry person. And I think I'm like, man, if I tried to call someone out for being an angry person during any point of those 3 years, that would not have been received well because, man, that would have been hypocritical.
Mm-hmm. And especially so, if they know you.
Especially if they know me and if they know that, like, yeah, this is something that I, you know, I'm dealing with. And so, yeah, trying to find a way to do that in a way that will be received well is really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in that case, you know, it depends, too. You have public settings and then more, you're in a conversation with a friend and that sharing can be different.
Yeah.
It can be helpful to share, just like you did now, in the issue we were talking about, this kind of reshaping of God in our image or to our comfort. You know, if I'm going to say to you, Austin, boy, I think you're doing that in this way, it would be helpful for me to share maybe how I know I've done that or struggle with doing that in my own life. Because that's a big one, too, if you're going to say, I think your image of God's a little bit off here. It's a pretty big deal. But I was really challenged in this text, not only by the fact, here's God testing, but you just have all these elements. So in verse 12, I think it is, when the angel stops Abraham and says, now I know that you believe in the Lord and you trust in him. What do you mean, now you know? Right. Isn't this God? Didn't you know before? Just those things should make, you know, that's a wrestling. What is going on here? You know, didn't God know before about Abraham's faith? He had to see it. There's just things mysterious there that we had to work out. And it was a reminder for me that, to kind of boil down this particular issue, anytime I think I have God cornered, I better beware.
Yeah.
Because he is not graspable for me.
Mm-hmm.
especially in this life and in our flesh now. But in general, you know, I think even in eternity, he's God, we're not. he's just going to be mysterious to us in a lot of ways because of how he is. So when I start, and when we sometimes as churches start being so sure of ourselves, I think there's things, of course, about God that he's revealed to us in his word we can stand on strongly. But we have to also hold this mystery of who God is alongside these things he's revealed to us and keep reexamining those too, of course, and looking at them. But it's easy for me to put God in a box.
Yeah, absolutely. And then so when we recognize that, okay, yeah, maybe I have been, you know, my image of God has been kind of messed up. How do I go about deconstructing that image of God and reconstructing something healthy without throwing the baby out with the bathwater? Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah, just kind of completely losing sight of the faith or something like that. Right. Or, yeah, kind of.
Because obviously, you know, that is a really, really, really big topic. That's one we could probably spend weeks talking about. So not necessarily asking like what's a 5-minute version of, you know, healthy reconstruction, because that's not necessarily going to be something we can do, but just like, what are some things that steps I can take to make sure that, like, if I've been, you know, if I've changed what God should look like and I recognize that, how do I go about doing that well?
I hope on the ground level, understanding that the Lord knows us and is willing to work with us and forgive us. We are not the first ones to kind of create him in our own image.
Yeah.
This coming week, we're going to be, Lord willing, in Exodus 33. It's right after the golden calf.
Okay.
And Moses is wrestling with God about the relationship with his people. But God eventually expresses the willingness to go forward with them, despite this flagrant picture of them recasting God in the image of a calf. Right. And so I think for us, reminding ourselves, when it becomes evident that, oh, I have been making God a God who's just about my blessing or about my way, or that kind of functions the way I function in my life, whatever that recasting's been, and I realize that can hurt, you know, and say, you know, boy, I've blown it. I'm terrible. To know that God's seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
He's forgiven this before. He'll forgive it again. He'll walk forward with you. I hope that gives you the space to say, okay, let's try to look at this. And I don't know, it's going to be different probably depending on yourself and your situation. For me, I'll just share, like, it's helpful for me if I've identified this is how I tend to recast God. Maybe it's he's an American God, right? He's kind of fitting my culture that I know and grew up with.
He grew up in Ottawa County.
Right, yeah, something like that, right? Or, yeah, West Michigan, if you're listening from that area. It's kind of the world we know, so we tend to shape things in that direction. So anyways, if that's my kind of temptation there, or whatever you want to call it, my proclivity, to make sure I kind of set up, at least even mentally, some warnings or some like markers to say, oh, I'm getting into this. Maybe I'm just talking to people who also are kind of reinforcing that image, or maybe in my prayers even, it keeps going this way, or in the way I worship and the way I am reading texts and interacting with them, it's always going to this very comfortable, very Dan-sized view of things. And so just to kind of keep checking myself. And maybe there's a question you can ask, even as you read scripture, is this, you know, how does this fit with how I view the world, and how does it challenge that?
Yeah.
Just to kind of
say. Well, that's such an important question, because like when we, you know, now when we're reading this passage, we're reading it, again, like we said at the outset of this, in the light of the crucifixion and in the light of, you know, Jesus' death on the cross. And so when we approach this passage, we approach it with that knowledge and assumption, which is, you know, helpful, and that makes sense. But we have to at least acknowledge, like, hey, we're approaching this text in a way that was completely different than how anyone would have approached this text before the Council of Nicaea.
Sure. Right. Yeah. We have all this added history, and we see even more. I mean, Tim and I were just talking this morning at just how you see Paul dealing with this particular text. It comes up in Romans. It comes up in Hebrews there, too, in that author. And just some things that maybe now we wouldn't think of, but that were clear to them just shortly after Christ's death and resurrection. And it's just interesting to see that and how quickly we get in our way of looking at things, have our blinders on. So just reminding myself and asking that question, am I shaping this text, even just reading this text, into how I want it to sound mm-hmm. and to be for my life and yeah. what's comfortable. What do I need? What's here is uncomfortable. And then pointing that out, because there's probably way more things that are uncomfortable in the text, Old and New Testament, than we're willing to admit. And sometimes, I'll speak personally, I want to be able to say, I have every text figured out. And it's clear, and here's what it means. Here's the one meaning of this parable. Here's
right.
the... And that's just not going to be the case when it yeah. comes to dealing with the Lord and dealing with cultural distance. And mm-hmm. it doesn't mean we shouldn't investigate and shouldn't pray and study. But when you're dealing with God, it's not just going to be that easy or always yeah. black and white. And so making sure that I'm coming in with that understanding and I'm willing to be challenged
yes.
personally in the text, in worship, as mm-hmm. I talk with other Christians, certainly as God leads me to different things in my life.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dan. I really appreciate that. That's something I hope we get to continue talking about later, and I'm sure especially in this series and further on we'll get more options for that. But thank you again for your time and your insight, and thank you everyone for joining us. We will be back again next week.